lighting equipment. And that is not our keyboard. That belongs, I think, to the Glendale room. We've got all these stuffed Knuckleses. We've got five. We've got five. Well,
I was
going
to add.
Technically six stuffed Knuckleses. One is smaller than the others, and then a Sonic. So the big Knuckleses, those were won at the Round One Arcade in Burbank. There was a claw machine that had, it was all Knuckles in there. And if you look, Knuckles has those little quills on the back of his head.
Yeah, because he's an echidna.
There you go. That's right.
I know the lore.
Not a lot of people know this. And so the way that that toy is shaped with those little quills pointing down, it's a perfect thing to hook the claw onto. So we just kept winning them all night. We all won multiple Knuckleses and a Sonic, and we brought them back here. And now,
and you felt like victory.
Yeah, and now they. I made a video where I was in the parking garage of that arcade holding all of the Knuckleses, and I screamed at the top of my lungs, "I'm a god." It was one of the best nights of my life. And then there's the Sonic that doesn't really fit in. And
it's
then,
all downhill from here.
There's a small Knuckles that I paid like $25 for at Knott's Berry Farm to play the little the hammer, hit the hammer, ring the bell.
Yeah,
game.
You know, those are mostly gravity.
Yeah, that's what the guy. That's what, like, I think I've always kind of known. It's like all about just hitting it on the right spot.
Yeah,
less about the brute force, but
because if you hit it too hard, it actually it increases friction and it makes it so it doesn't go up as high.
Really?
Yeah. Because. You know about static friction coefficients?
Sure. Not at all.
Well,
static friction I think I can infer. So is that like
the idea is
a static object?
Well, so this is how friction works. Is essentially every you know how everything is made of atoms?
Yeah.
Imagine those atoms as sets of triangles.
Yeah.
And friction is what that triangle is angled at.
Oh, good.
So when you're having triangles move against triangles, if your triangle is flatter, it's easier to move across.
Oh.
And if it's up more, it's harder to move across. It takes more force.
Okay.
So, and also if you have one angled like this, like what sandpaper is supposed to do and stuff like that, mm-hmm. it makes it so every item goes like that.
Oh.
That's how friction works.
Cool.
So your static friction coefficient is the steepness of your triangle. And aren't you glad this is an audio medium, so yes. My hands weren't in that at all?
I was about to ask you, could you go back in time and teach younger me? Maybe I would have done better in school.
But that's how friction works.
I know that inertia is a property of matter.
That's true. Do you know what inertia is?
It's a the energy of movement.
Is that kind of inertia is resistance to change in velocity,
okay.
Essentially. So it's cool. Like an item with a more inertia is a bigger item because it takes more force to move it and it takes more force to stop it.
Sure.
That's what inertia is.
Most people consider me the smartest person they know. Oh, boy.
You got me in physics land, baby. That's what I like.
I mean, I've known this that you could if I ever need like a deck built, you're my first phone call.
Well, yeah, I haven't built a deck, but I can figure it out.
Yeah, of course. What have you just always been handy? Like, have you always just enjoyed like building and making like weird? Because you've made like unique things, like contraptions and things like that.
Yeah, I've always been kind of weirdly handy. Uh-huh. But it also comes down to my dad's a construction worker.
Oh, there you go.
So, like, I did a ton of remodeling and stuff as a kid. Mm-hmm. But when I was a kid, he worked more up into it. Like, he was in the corporate realm mm-hmm. when I was a kid. So, mm-hmm. it was more that his construction would come out and remodeling our house constantly.
Oh.
And there was, there's a specific memory I have is that, like, every time I would have too much energy... my dad would have me go and pull nails until I got tired. And I didn't...
Such a dad thing. Go pull
it really is. Yeah, 100%, yeah. Like, every night I would just be pulling nails. And it took me so long to realize, why are there so many nails at a height I can reach?
What was the answer?
I have no idea. I haven't asked him about it.
Okay,
but a big part of me thinks that he was putting nails in just so I would have to take him out.
Pull him out. Just... God, what a dark
just him with
thought.
A framing gun going
just in the middle of the night just this is for next weekend when he fucks up.
This will take him an hour.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But that's what I did. And then so I did that, and then in high school I was a head tech. I didn't start as a head tech, but I did stagecraft all 4 years, and I became a head tech.
Yeah.
So, and I'm an Eagle Scout, so it's like those kind of things connect into me being handy.
You may be the first Eagle Scout we've had on the show. I'm going to have to double check that, but you very well might
You'd have to ask people. Most people hide it because yeah. they're ashamed.
I was a Boy Scout for 2 camping trips.
Oh, yeah?
Listen, I love the outdoors. I was born and raised in the Ozarks, and so I was always like out in the woods going backpacking, hiking,
yeah, with
canoes.
Mosquitoes up there, right?
Mosquitoes, black bears, meth heads. We had a litany of things that we got to go
Trust
out.
Trust me, I've met some black bears in West Hollywood. You know what
hey,
I'm saying?
Hey, now, come on. Oh, hey, we'll be right back. Let's go over to the big board. It's 2 points. Yeah. what was I saying? Oh, yeah. And
you only lasted 2 camping trips?
Yeah. Speaking of Boy Scouts, hey, you. Yeah. Well, the thing is, I realized quickly that my personality didn't mesh with any of the other Boy Scouts because they were all fucking losers.
I've been writing a bit about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many times you have people talk about bits on this. Is
all
that fun?
All the time.
Oh, well, I'm writing a bit about how I hate it because when you played with sticks as a kid, everybody was like swords. You're swinging
talk
them
to
at each other.
This, yeah.
But I was just DM'd you because I was curious. But people in California, because I was a Boy Scout in Hawaii when I lived there, and then I moved here and I was also a Boy Scout. Mm. And for some reason, instead of using them as swords, they'd use them as guns. So you wouldn't be doing damage to your friends.
Weird.
And it's like, what's the point in playing if I can't hit you hard?
Right. And also a much worse, like, imaginative weapon.
Yeah.
Like a fun little sword. You don't encounter a sword in your everyday life, but nowadays it's like the gun is, it's almost like an inevitable
thing. Yeah, you can get those in school.
Yes, exactly. Jesus Christ. I don't know. My little brother just graduated high school, and I breathed a sigh of relief the day that he was handed his diploma, because it's like, he made it out! Okay! Woo! Boy! But now he's in college, and it's like, ugh, it's a bigger campus he can run. It almost sounded like, it's a bigger campus he can run. Where was it? Yeah.
I wouldn't go for it. If I was going to shoot up a school, college would not be my option.
No,
you know, you want them when they got little legs.
Yeah, exactly. Rest in peace, too. I'm sure when this comes out tomorrow, actually, there'll probably be another tragedy announced. We've got one a week these days.
And I'm not even going to be an asshole who says, bleep that. Fucking keep it in.
All right. This is the new We Didn't Peak, baby. We're hardcore. We like to fucking hammer it.
I got nothing to lose.
Woo! That is a fun place to be in your life, where it's just like, you know what, why don't you just fucking kill me? I did a podcast recently. I am not at that point in my life. I am very scared and love rules, but I did a podcast the other day that was for a person's Patreon, and I was like, this is behind a paywall, right? And they said, yeah, and then I just started like naming names first and last of people I don't like.
That's hilarious.
It was really liberating,
actually. I love talking shit.
Me too, man. I don't know, but I remember specifically at the Boy Scouts like thing, the biggest issue I had was it was like all car camping. Also, our troop, they didn't. It was like pull
in the
up.
Ozarks.
Yeah, for this it was like troop 200 or something like that, which is a cool number to be.
Troop 2 was our adversary.
Oh, really?
499 for life, baby.
Oh,
deep rooted.
Shit, I didn't realize who I was dealing with. man, 499 was your scout troop.
Fuck yeah, den and and troop.
What a fuck.
We're pack.
You know, that is a cool thing to like be able to hold on to, but I would be honestly a little disappointed that you didn't get the 500. You
just
didn't
not
get
quite there.
The clean 500.
499 is more fun to say.
499. Brooklyn 99.
499. I don't remember what it was in Hawaii, but that's what it was when I moved over here.
Interesting, interesting, interesting. Yeah, the kids just fucking stunk. The kids stunk. The adults, like,
You might have been in a bad troop. You gotta get a good troop.
Oh, it was definitely a bad troop. Like, I remember we went to one of the camping trips was at Camp Arrowhead, which is, like, this big...
Sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's, like, the big, like, hub where it was, like, there was a big, like, scout event where, like, dozens of troops were there. It was, like, this big
weekend. Was it Jamboree?
Thing. It was one of those, yeah. It was some sort of... A jamboree, a hullabaloo, a fuck the kids thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was sponsored by the Catholic Church. It was amazing. And they came in.
You know what? Actually, it's a lot of Mormons.
Really?
Boy Scouts is a lot of Mormons.
I could see that. That's the energy that I was getting from a lot of these scout leaders. But I don't know. I came from like a different like walk of life. I get like these guys were all just fucking booger eating morons. They liked this. We're 14 years old or 13 years old. These guys thought the funniest thing in the entire world was saying boil 'em, mash 'em, put 'em in a stew from Lord of the Rings over and over again, like as a boil 'em, mash 'em, put 'em in a stew, but like they would like chant it and
you
they would piss themselves laughing. Hey, you made it to Eagle. That's what's important here. Oh my god,
I did make it to. Well, there was definitely moments where I wanted to quit, and my parents just wouldn't let me.
Cool.
They didn't let me do anything.
That's good parents.
Ever.
Yeah.
And then I succeeded, and I was like, you know what? They were right.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing they were right about.
What was? Hey, I mean,
that's probably not true.
What was your Eagle project?
They probably knocked it down by now.
Whoops.
No, it was built well. I actually didn't have anyone help me plan it either. Talking about how handy I was, mm-hmm. is like I planned out the entire construction of this structure,
mm-hmm.
and I submitted, and they were like, "Oh, who helped you draw up these plans?" And I was like, "Someone was supposed to help me."
But, can I get a second badge?
Yeah, I needed a second opinion. I thought that's what this was for, and they proved it. We were all good. But I built a teepee. For my local school, the high school I went to, our mascot was the Indians.
Cool.
So I built a big plat, like a refurbished and revitalized, built a whole sign. It was a gorgeous project, redwood sealed. Ooh.
Wow.
Guarantee you it's not there anymore.
There's no way, Whitey. They tore that thing down.
Yeah, the one thing I gave this world.
The one piece of good I tried to do. That's I've had a guy on the show here who's like an actor and a musician guy, and he's from Missouri as well. And there's a town in Missouri that he's from that it's Savannah, Missouri. I believe it's Savannah, Missouri, but their mascot up until, I think at the time of that recording, like a year or two ago, was the Savages.
Yeah,
just way worse than just about any of the others. But
every year we had the mascot of the Indian. It was never like a fursuit type thing. It was just face paint on a dude in a vest.
Just a guy.
Always a white
guy.
Just
an Irish Catholic.
And he'd have a spear, but it was just like a banister from fucking like the upright in a. On a handrail, like the thing that keeps that up. It was just one of those, which is so stupid because you can just get a spear.
What an insane world. We were the Eagles. What's wrong? That's just clean fun.
That's
just
good.
The Nixa Eagles.
If you could pick a mascot name, what would it be? If you could make one.
If I could have. I'm really. My college was Bears.
That's
and
good.
I really like bears, but I'd like polar bear,
ooh.
like a type of bear. Like it's the Missouri State polar bear.
That's a bears are classic. Polar bears are a good little cold twist on it, especially if you're in a snowy city.
Mm-hmm.
I like them.
Yeah, I don't know. Could
I
be
think
fun.
Around here somewhere they have the banana slugs, don't they?
Yes, there's a banana slugs. There's a lot of fun ones.
There's an anteater.
There's a kewpie in Missouri.
Oh yeah,
like the little.
Imagine if they had one that was just the kiwis.
That would be.
That'd be fucking great.
That'd be a little fun.
I want a mascot of something I can crush in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to be the symbol of our power.
That's an incredible. Well, I mean, what school was I just? There was one that I swear to God, it was like the mice or something.
Yeah,
like, it's like you can't possibly get any pride out of this. Just like the bugs or something.
I love that. Just yelling, "We're small and pathetic!" Mm-hmm. Like is your battle cry.
It's I don't care fucking about awesome. You. Yeah, but. Oh boy, what was your mascot? What was your,
well, in high school, Zinnies, I didn't go to college.
Okay.
So, nothing.
Interesting. No college for you. Well, we could skip that whole portion of the interview.
That's pretty. I can talk about my sister's colleges because I have a twin sister.
I do. Okay, yeah. I knew you were from Hawaii or had at least lived there for a while. I knew you had a twin sister. I know a handful of things about you. I like to talk a little bit whenever I have comics on, which I'm trying to only have comics on from here on out for the most part because the rest of you are fucking boring and don't share the posts sometimes. how do you feel right now? I talked about this a little bit with Alex from the Comedy Store.
And Which one?
Alex Hanna.
Okay.
And he and I are kind of aligned on this, pretty well aligned on it. What do you, how do you feel about like the current state of the world of stand-up comedy and like the clipification of everything?
It's weird. It's weird to have a live medium focus on views for later.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like trying to make a single moment in your act perfect, and like a lot of people, you see it, they'll get a good clip, but they'll sacrifice the whole set just for like 1 minute of good material.
Yeah,
because they're so, especially when they're hammering the crowd work, and a lot of these guys aren't good at crowd work.
No. The audience member is doing the heavy lifting for them.
Yeah, they're just getting lucky with the information they pull out instead of stumbling. I hate seeing someone sacrifice the art form they've dedicated themselves for success later. It's just it's gross.
Yeah.
And it's not what we're in it for.
No.
That said, I've had clips do very well.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I mean, that's the thing. Humble brag. It's, I don't know. I was just listening to Andrew Schultz talking about it and how he's like, at first everyone was like, oh, that's crazy, don't do that. When he was like, I was one of the first people that was doing it, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And now it's like how things are. And I'm like, I just am kind of praying that this trend ends and we loop back to something else.
Well, it'll definitely end.
Yeah.
Because the simple fact of it is that if you're advertising with clips that don't represent your stand-up, people aren't going to want to see you again. They're going to want to see you once.
No. And I think there's really... with all these trends, I think one person gets the real rub from it and absorbs.
Matt Rife.
And it's Matt Rife. And before Matt, it was Dane Cook. Dane Cook was the first stand-up that took advantage of social media. And so Matt Rife is the new Dane Cook.
Like, 100%. And I like Matt Rife.
And I like Dane Cook.
I like both of them.
I like both of them fine. Matt's a cool guy. He's only ever been very nice to me. One time I said, you've got a beautiful chin. And he said, you've got a beautiful beard. I'm jealous. And I said, I'm going to kill you in the parking lot.
you have a beautiful beard. Take your pants off.
That's right.
We're going.
Okay. Oh, I've never been here before. But he did shows at my hometown comedy club, which is hilarious because I love it. And it's like a 300-seater. It's called the Blue Room. It's a really great club. A lot of good comics go through and do it. But it was just funny because it clearly had been put on like his calendar pre his big explosion. Like it was during his first little explosion.
Oh, because it was like a smaller event?
It was like a smaller club, and it's like theater, arena, theater, comedy club in southern Missouri, theater. It's like, oh, you're just honoring your past like bookings, which is really cool.
Good on him.
Yeah. But
I like everything about him.
Yeah. It's like... I hear people that are complaining.
I hear a lot of people complaining about him.
And I hear most people are complaining about him. But it is also, I hope what he ultimately represents, other than great success for him, continued great success for him. My buddy Kyle's his cameraman, which is very cool. Continued success. I hope that his success drives people that should have quit a long time ago to finally quit. You know what I mean?
That's so funny.
Like,
the guys that have been doing it 11 years and getting up on less shows than us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the people that just fucking... I don't know. I have this... It's a very specific demographic in my head that I complain about a lot, especially on this show, where it's like just dudes on the wrong side of 40 that... have no real
sad.
That have been doing this, that are still doing, can you guys believe this COVID stuff? Like, it's depressing. One time I was in a green room and there was a guy on stage, and the dude sitting next to me in the green room, not naming names, just started reciting the guy on stage's set as he was doing it. And I was like,
I've done that.
Has he done that? He goes, he's been doing those jokes for 12 years. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Can you bleep names if I say names?
I don't think I have that power, but write it down.
Wait, okay. Is there something I can write down?
Do you have your phone?
It's actually like a name that the only name I wouldn't want to say. Yeah, I have my phone. And now I use this. Voice type. does that work?
It's Darren Carter. I love Darren.
I'm going to write down two names, and the first name was the guy talking to me, and the second one was who he was talking about, but it was that exact same situation.
Oh, boy. It's not. I jokingly said, I don't know if the mic picked it up, I jokingly said Darren Carter as a joke. I love Darren Carter, the party starter. He always does improv, so his set couldn't be repeated. Let's see.
With those guys.
Wow.
So it's like happening on every level.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And which is insane, right?
That guy, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. But no,
dude, hearing him talk and hearing them have a conversation, mm-hmm. because we're talking about successful comedians now, like yes. legit head yes. names.
Names, yeah.
And they were like talking about the different features they got on their Teslas. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there like, yes, this is relatable.
Sweet guys.
Oh, yes. I too didn't like the steering wheel I ended up with. Like, it was insane. I felt so out of place. And then the one that they were talking about was talking about how he visited Elon Musk at the factory in Texas. And he was like, hey, does that Cybertruck fit in Elon Musk's tunnel that he built underground? And Elon was like, I don't know. Let's go check. And they just drove a car 6 miles underground. And this is a conversation happening in front of me. And I have nothing to add.
Nope.
And then he was like, and we got down there and the truck fit and all that. And we were like, well, we're not driving all the way back up. So we took an elevator up to the surface and just ended up in some guy's backyard.
What is this tale?
It's fucking absurd.
This is the life that some people live.
It's crazy.
That's crazy. That's a man.
Those are the green room talks where you shut up and listen.
Exactly. I feel like one of the people in that story is such an old timer. He would really enjoy you because you kind of have a sense of... Your aesthetic feels like something from the 1970s.
I'll say the first name that I showed you enjoys me a lot.
Okay.
And because I went to his special taping.
Okay.
And then he was like, hey, take down my number. And I've gone and...
That's nice.
So he enjoys me.
Yeah.
The other one I don't know at all.
Right, because I don't think he's knowable.
He doesn't want to know people.
On purpose. Well, and here's the thing. That is cool that person was... It's cool whenever we find... Like, guys at our, like, rank find a legit, like, headliner, like, name that's actually cool and willing to, like, be nice and help. Like,
yeah.
I've had some good fortune with that, but there's also, like, because it's too it's guys that are like that are, like, super just all about the young guys, like, willing to, like, give a leg up, some advice, throw you on a show, whatever it is. Or they're guys that it's just, like, I'm so sorry, I'm just too famous to... worry about that. Like, it's just not on my radar. I'm focusing on me. But then right below...
And I don't blame any... I don't blame those guys either.
Not at all. Enjoy your money. I wouldn't talk to me. And then right below that, like, guys that, like, kind of like what I was saying, wrong side of 40, haven't really found their way for one reason or the other. Usually it's because they're not very good, but they just keep fucking plugging away at it. And they become these gatekeepers that, like, while people are trying to climb the ladder, they're staring down. It's like, I fought so fucking hard to get to this rung right here. And if that kid half my age gets anywhere near me, I'm kicking him in the face as many times as I possibly can. And it's crippling and it's sad. And you have to find a way around that part of the ladder rather than plow through it, because those boys have a strong grip.
It's crazy. Like, those guys, they'll say mean shit after you do well. Mm-hmm. And then you, like, convince yourself that you didn't do well.
Oh, yeah. Well, one time I did a set that objectively fucking, like, crushed. Like,
yeah.
Did great. Come back to the green room, this, like, scary, shady, shifty-looking guy, I don't even remember his name, it, like, looks at me and is just like, cool it with the yelling shit. What's with the yelling shit? And I was like, what? He's like,
you mean my act?
Right. I was like, you mean the thing that they all really enjoyed? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he's just like, and then he proceeded to go up there and completely alienate himself from the entire audience and not get a single laugh. But
classic.
He was doing it the right way.
And they'll always brag about who they've opened for.
They'll brag about who they have opened for. They'll also say things like, I have been in 2 Academy Award nominated films. Like, what?
It's like they have to sell themselves to an open micer.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
I will tell this story. Probably the coolest green room interaction I've ever had with a named person was Bill Burr. He was doing a spot at the Ha Ha when I was running sound.
I went and watched. I was there.
Oh, yeah, you were there. Those are always so fun whenever it's just like, oh, and randomly here's one of the most famous men in the world sneaking
in through
the back.
Joe Coy just went through.
Mm-hmm. I saw that. It's like a little hidden little gem. But I was working the sound for Bill Burr, and I ended up doing a little bit of time, I think, on one of the shows that he did. But anyway, he... I know I did. I just don't know if it was this night. I don't think it was this night. It was some other time. But at one point, it was just he and I in the green room by ourselves. And he just turns to me and he's like, I heard this great story the other day. And he just starts telling this long, long, like one of those old style jokes that takes like 4 minutes to get to the punchlines at the very end.
Yeah.
And he's like, the fucking person's like, hey, I just lit the guy on stage. Like he's like, oh, la, la, la. And he's like, I got to finish the story. And he like finishes the joke. It's about a guy that smashes walnuts with his giant cock at the circus. And it's just like, I was sitting there going, I'm going to play this so cool because it's him, and if I, like, try to get a little corny at all, he'll be like, oh, fuck off, whatever. But I was just like, I was in heaven for those 4 minutes. And
it's fucking magical.
I know. It's like a weird... I felt like I was in Crashing. I felt like I was in Pete Holmes' Crashing some nights at the Haha. Like, whenever, like, Kevin Hart would come through.
Kevin Hart had you make me move so his ladies could sit down at a table.
That's true.
Hey. Instead of just asking me... himself.
Because why would he?
Talk through a proxy.
That's right.
And he talked through a proxy as if he thought that you wouldn't know me.
Right.
That was so strange.
It was an interesting... He also, like... My favorite part about any time Kevin Hart would come through was he was always, like, coming from, like, another event, like a concert or something. Like, the first time when I opened the show that he was, like, secret headliner, but everybody in the audience knew who he was going to be him. He, like, was coming from a concert, and they were all dressed, like, on theme for the band or whatever it was. And it was just, like, it was, like, him and his wife
his
and, like,
his
whole...
huge bodyguards.
His enormous body. Because he's a little guy.
Enormous. But yeah, he's the kind of height where you see him, and you're like, I just want to start slapping.
Kevin, if you're listening, and I know that you are, call me back, please.
He can kill me. I know he can. He works out.
He's a billionaire with a B.
Oh, yeah.
He could pay somebody to
and
kill
he's so
you.
Fun. He fucking destroyed that night.
He did that. My God. I don't... I
he had me in awe that night.
It was... Because it was... And it was all new stuff, too, which was cool. Like, he was just starting. And I think the stuff he was doing that night is, like, what his newest special is. Like, is what it contains.
I think so. I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched it yet, but I want to because I still remember the bit where he talks about his phone dying in his car while he was, like, driving on some highway. And rather than... He didn't have his charger, and he was like... Well, I decided in that moment, like, I have to go find a new life. Like, I don't know how to get
We're
home.
Done.
So he went to a phone store and bought a new phone instead of a charger. He just bought an entirely new phone to navigate, just to navigate back to his house.
That's so fucking funny.
Like, because normally I don't think rich people jokes are very funny. Like, I hate it when, like, a guy gets super rich and famous and, like, does that. Like, Tracy Morgan, no shade at Tracy Morgan, but maybe a little bit. I saw a trailer for his newest special where he's like, my Tinder profile's just a picture of a Walmart truck backing up money onto my front yard. I'm like, oh,
but if you saw that on Tinder, you'd laugh.
Right. I would laugh. And also, he did get almost murdered by a semi truck. So he's allowed to joke about it.
The thing that impressed me most about when Kevin was up at the Haha was because he wasn't ignoring every heckle or audience noise.
No.
But he knew which ones would help him go further and which would hold him back. Mm-hmm. And he would totally ignore the ones that were going to hold him back. And he would interact with the ones that he could get a laugh out of or make funny.
Yeah.
And it was so masterful to see him know immediately which was which.
Mm-hmm.
In a way where I was like, God damn, I haven't done this long enough to know how to do that.
Right. Yeah, I want to clap back at everybody or be scared at everybody. Like,
yeah, right?
Yeah. It's that's got to be the old, like, East Coast, like, shit. Like, because he came up in New York and Philly.
I think it's just the fucking experience. I think...
Yeah.
I think learning anything, and stand-up specifically, is when you're coming up to a new craft or a new item or even a new communicating with a new person, you have like 1,000 tiles in front of you, and there's only one real path. And some of the tiles are fake, and when you step on them, they disappear, and you fall, and you die, and you go back to the start.
True.
But you don't know which ones are fake until you step on them.
Yeah.
So it's like learning stand-up is just fucking clearing as many of the fake tiles near the path as we can early.
Yeah.
So that way we can just get further and further along every time.
That's a good point.
It's just fucking figuring out what fails. That's what we're doing. For years, yeah. We're just figuring out what fails. We're not figuring out what works.
Nope.
We're stumbling upon
stumbling
what works.
Stumbling around in the dark.
We're just figuring out what doesn't work.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's fun. When I describe it to my normal friends, they look at me like I've just told them my plan to blow up a building.
Right? It's like... Oh, my God. I do a lot of roasts. I just hit a button. Did that affect anything?
No.
Okay. What does that minus button do? Affect my amplitude?
I honestly couldn't tell you.
Hell yeah.
I think you're fine. I don't know this equipment.
But I do so many roasts, roast-based shows and roast battles.
Mm-hmm.
And if I run those on comedians that do roasts, they'll consider the joke and how it sounds. But if I do it to normal people, they just go, what the fuck?
Wrong with you? That's
and they're
mean.
Like, that's not funny at all. Yeah, and I'm like, no, but you're not hearing it in context.
No, the other guy's in on it.
It'll be hilarious when I say his date rape drug of choice is blunt force trauma. It'll be hilarious.
Yeah.
It'll land in the moment.
Oh my God.
But I figured that out more and more with my family. It's because
because
when you're brainstorming roast joke or any joke really, you're just throwing out everything and then you're only taking what you like because you're figuring out what fails. And my family hates to be around me when I do it. It's so boring to them because it's just an act in being mean for no reason.
My family hates to be around me. God.
That's a good just end-all, be-all statement about my relationship with my family.
That's going to be the title of the episode.
My family hates being around me.
Man, you were like one of the first people I met in the LA comedy world when I first moved here. Well, it was a year after I had moved here.
You know what's the weirdest fucking thing?
Mm.
I hear that a lot.
Really?
I do. I think I'm just friendly.
Yeah, I think so.
Or I don't even know if I'm friendly or other people just aren't friendly.
I think it's a little bit of both.
But 100%. A lot of black people say that to me.
Oh.
Which is strange.
Well, congratulations.
I'm their ambassador, cool. Man.
Yeah, that's right. No, it was at the... it was when the haha mic started up again outdoors.
Oh, yeah.
When it was just out on the patio, and you were the host of it. And I had been living in NoHo, but had actually, I don't think we'd moved to this house yet, but was living in NoHo. And I would just always, like during the pandemic when everything was like fully closed, I would just drive past it being like, I'm going to go in there one day, like whenever it's open. And I remember I got there and I did the mic, and then I went inside. And Ollie and Jack Jr. were standing at the bar, and I was like, those two look like they know things. And I walked up to them, had no idea who they were, and was like, hi, who do I talk to about getting booked here? Just huge swinging cock. Just all this confidence.
The two guys that book people there.
Exactly. It was perfect. And Jack gave me the fucking, like, are you funny? Like, huh? Like his like kind of like act.
And Ollie gave you that smile.
And Ollie was like, "What? Where am I?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm from Chicago. I've been doing comedy this amount of years." Like, and he's like, "If I call Curtis from the Laugh Factory, will he vouch for you?" And I was like, "Well, I never got in at the Laugh Factory, so probably not." And he's like, "Okay." And then he just turns to Ollie. He's like, "Put him up on Tuesday." And so I did Ollie's Tuesday night show like that, and I literally was just like, "This is the easiest thing in the world." My God.
They give a lot of opportunities to people there, but they give one.
Yes. You get the one.
You get the one.
And if you fuck it up.
And a lot of people don't understand that. And it's the other thing is they want you to kiss the ring.
Yes.
Like if during the one you do pretty good, you have to acknowledge it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't act like you did good. No. They don't like that shit.
They don't like that shit. They also don't like it when people kind of make fun of the room.
I've seen
so many people that, yeah, no owner really likes that, but I've seen so many people get their, like, one little spot on, like, a Tuesday or Wednesday night show and be like, oh, the fucking carpet, or whatever, and I'm just like, oh, my God.
And you never see him again at that
like,
club.
You idiot, they like this. I kind of like this.
I love it.
It's a fun vibe.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
I've hosted that mic for a long time. Here's the thing about when you start doing open mics is a lot of new open micers look at open mic hosts as if they're qualified and know what they're doing.
Yes.
And here's how I started hosting at the Ha Ha.
Mm-hmm.
They reopened in April of 2021, and I showed up every day for a week. And one of the guys looked at me and went, hey, we don't have a host for Wednesday. You want to do it. I was
maybe 3 months into comedy.
Really?
Maybe.
Wow.
Because it was like right when it reopened.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, I'll do it.
Amazing.
And I stumbled my way through until I figured it out. And that's like, the Ha-Ha is a legit club. I still host there.
Yeah.
And it's, I have no, I had no business doing it at the time.
That's, I mean, I would argue that that's exactly how these things always happen.
They it is.
Somebody who has no business being where they are just happened to be at the right place at the right time.
And now I have new open micers being like, Evan, I've always looked up to you. And I'm like, fucking why?
What?
I haven't done anything.
Oh, that's great. Well, you're slowly becoming the roast battle king of the valley, I will say. And over the hill.
Yeah, it happens. I did it in Austin too.
The thing about roast battles that I don't like is when you get paired with somebody that pretends like they know what's going on.
Oh yeah.
But then they get real angry and sad and butthurt during and then after. That's why I stopped doing roasts. I did a roast show in Chicago, and the guy that I did it with like wanted to fucking kill me afterwards because I was too mean.
Dude,
like,
the Chicago, right, well. The guy I battled in Austin was from Chicago. Oh, really? Brandon Kiefer, very funny. He kicked my ass. That's not why.
I think I know him.
Brandon. Oh, he's fucking great.
Yeah.
I really liked him.
Yeah, yeah.
I really enjoy him as a dude. He's doing great.
Yeah.
Fucking love that guy.
Sounds familiar.
But apparently the Chicago scene for roast battle is, it has more of a bullying kind of energy to it.
Yeah, they don't really.
It's extremely successful.
Yeah, well, they don't really do, at least the show I did, there wasn't like the customary like pre-show meeting where you like sit down with the other person or like, here's what you, whatever.
Yeah, that's what didn't, Brandon wouldn't let that happen.
Yep, you just get
on. I was like, all right.
It's just off the dome.
Guess I'm writing jokes about nothing.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, it's funny. Brandon actually, he sent me a list and he was like, because I was like, hey, what are some things about you that I can write about? And he was like, well, you know, people normally call me like pretty short. I'm 5'10". I was like, I'm 5'10". I'm not calling you. That's not short. He was like, you can probably call me racist and Southern, but it's in Austin, so that probably won't work. Like, that's what he was saying in the messages.
He's just setting you up for failure. That's kind of like, sweet.
Fucking all right.
That's the Chicago
way. I love
way.
It. Great guy.
But
they have a great roast battle league there now.
Hey, hats off to them. I will never participate in it, but hats off to them. I find myself having to hold my tongue in real life whenever I want to say things to people because it comes to me immediately. I drive, well, and I don't even hold my tongue most of the time. I drive around with my windows down in my car at all times, and I, at like, full volume say things like, you fucking moron, out my window at people. They're driving, and I know it's going to get me shot at least at one day. Maybe they won't hit it, but like they won't hit me. But I say some pretty vile things to people about their driving while I'm.
I say vile things to everyone about everything all the time. And you
it's
know what?
Fun.
That's the best part about doing the roast all the time is now I can get away with it even easier.
I've always
been able to get it because it's, you know, I'm small. You know, you don't want to hit me.
Yeah,
I'm weak.
You are a perfect roast comic because you are like I'm just a. Oh,
I'm so meek.
I'm like a sweet boy.
Look at me. You don't want me to be guilty.
Right, exactly.
Like,
you don't want me to be guilty.
That's what I am. That's what I look like.
That's
but
right.
Now I can just say vile shit all the time.
Uh-huh.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I said something to someone recently because they made a joke about the show Jesse. And I was like, oh, how do you know Jesse? Was it your daughter's favorite show? Oh, wait, you wouldn't know. It's like you can't say that to most people, but
no.
With my reputation now,
right.
I can't.
People expect it, and they honor it, and they allow it.
The worst, though, is when you have a good like little razz to somebody normal, and they just don't even understand that it was an insult.
Right.
Because there was a girl that was trying to flirt with me recently Thousand Oaks, but she was really fucking annoying. One of those just really boisterous type people who doesn't shut up ever, and aggressive. And she was saying how great her tits were. She's like, these tits have won awards. And I said, what awards? And she said, wet t-shirt concerts. And I said, oh, local.
Regional.
And she went, yeah, local. Like, didn't even understand what that meant.
Oh, bless her heart. That's, man, I just thought, when you said, what awards, I imagine Norm MacDonald going, what awards? Worst tits ever awards? Oh my god.
And that's a good one too.
It is. Hey, we lost a pioneer. Truly. Let's have a moment of no. Okay. So we've been talking about you being a.
You said you'd start on school. You didn't ask me anything about school.
That's where we warm into that. That's the second half of the interview. Thank you for listening to the show, by the way. this is how it always goes. I'll just come out and say it. What were you like in elementary school?
I don't fucking know. What?
You don't remember?
I was pretty much the same. I always had a cognitive dissonance between what I was in school because of what my family made me think I was.
Okay.
Because I was always... I was very much treated as a problem child at home mm-hmm. because my older brother was and I was similar to him. Mm. So I would constantly be under punishment for doing nothing. And that's always fucked with my self-image.
Interesting.
And I've been trying to figure that out more and more now.
Gotcha.
But, like, in elementary school, I had one friend, and I was quiet.
Wow.
Well, I was yelled at for everything. I was just trying to do less.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean,
try to get yelled at less.
you were fucking being accused before the crime was committed.
Dude, yeah. My parents got me a life coach in
what?
Sixth grade because I was too argumentative.
Oh boy, I've never heard that one before. That's where, like, okay. So
I didn't realize that was weird until I started saying that on stage.
Yeah,
and people were like, "What?"
They were giving you books on how to be. What was like? Where did you grow up? Like primarily.
So I was born in Washington State.
Okay.
But I only lived there 3 years, I don't even fucking remember it.
Yeah.
And then the next 7.5 to 8 years was in Hawaii. Mm. So that was your formative childhood.
Yeah.
That was like the kind of childhood where you're mostly around family. Because as you get older, you branch out more into actual society.
Yeah, yeah.
And then California for the rest of all. I was in Santa Clarita from fourth grade onward.
Oh, okay. So those are like the real years, basically.
Yeah,
like,
essentially.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Santa
Which is
Clarita.
Weird. Because I have... Because I did acting and stuff when I was in... I started trying to do acting mm-hmm. when I was in junior high. And then I've done it since, but as soon as I found stand-up, that's where all the focus went.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this has all the parts of acting I like and none of the bullshit I hate. And I just stuck with that.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, most of my childhood has been indoctrinated with these kind of Hollywood values and way of looking at the world. And it's not America.
Very well said. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
At all. And because most of America is sitting around and trying not to be bored.
Yep.
And not worrying about what you're saying or how you're coming across.
Nope.
That's not... So it's like, I've more and more been realizing how I didn't live the American experience, and now I have to, going on the road and stuff.
Yeah.
I have to learn what it's like to be an American and not a Californian.
You're giving me so many good potential episode titles. I have to learn what it's like to be an American. That is, well, coming, like, living in Missouri, in the same, like, 200 square mile radius in Missouri for the first 21 years of my life, I couldn't imagine. And I think, honestly, that's kind of why a lot of what is being put into movies and TV is bad these days, is because all of the actors and the people, like, grew up here. And it's like you don't have, like, this, like...
There's so much nepotism, nobody has a fucking story to tell.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's somebody... And it's not always just like, oh, and this is Julia Roberts' son. It's like, oh, his uncle... is a big-time executive at this company that is also partnered with this.
Yeah.
Like, it's tricky nepotism.
And it's why so many movies now are about making movies and making TV shows. They're making projects about Hollywood because that's all the people making it know. That's
exactly.
All the writers know. And I fucking grew up in that. And I wasn't seeing that it's bullshit until... Because all anyone cares about in Hollywood is Hollywood. They're mm-hmm. talking about movies, TV shows, and all that. And
yep.
as soon as you go outside of L.A., you're like, oh, no one gives a fuck about any of that.
Nope.
And why would you?
No.
But here it's our entire economy.
Here it's the bread and butter, and we are on strike, baby. Give us that sweet, sweet money. It's like, I remember, because I went to school for acting. I have a degree in acting from my college, and I also was similar to you, what you said, like, oh, I like stand-up because it's all the best parts without the bullshit.
Yeah, it's none of the, I'm waiting for someone to pick me for something they already need.
Exactly.
This is what I want to be, and then we'll figure out the success after.
That is exactly why I've gotten way in, like my entire trajectory shifted a while ago from like, I want to be in movies and TV shows and also do a little stand-up too. I want to do stand-up and YouTube. Like, that is that, because that's me. I get to make it. I get to build it. I get to choose how much time I put into it.
I get to be fucking undeniable.
Exactly. It's not me sitting around in my little apartment being like, I got an acting class at noon that the lady that teaches it, she used to work for CBS, and she still knows some people.
And fucking
there.
Waiting from a script that happens to work for you, and then someone just arbitrarily deciding, yeah, that guy gets to do it. Because that's really what it is. That's what a casting director is. That guy gets to do it.
Yep. Fuck it. Ladies and gentlemen, Avery Brooks.
Hey, it's good to see you.
Oh.
Oh, it's your mother.
Oh.
Can I say hi? She'll remember me.
You can.
Cool.
It's very static because she's down by a lake.
Hello.
Evan. Chance.
It's good to see you.
Good. Yeah, good.
All right. Well, you guys enjoy the podcast.
You continue on with the rest of your day normal-wise. Well, that was Avery, everybody. For those of you that don't know, Avery Brooks, a very funny, he is a comedian.
He's got hot dog water in his Instagram thing, right?
A hot dog Avery.
A hot dog Avery, there it is.
Free shout out for old hot dog Avery. Go follow him, he could use it. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, it's the monster is starting to eat itself, and I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
And the monster is so self-important.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well,
here's the biggest thing I think about all the AI shit is that it makes it easier to make movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. Because that means these people in Missouri and middle America, instead of just waiting for these production studios to be like, yeah, I'll give you a chance, they can just make what they want to make.
Yeah, I think there is some positive like tools like to be used like from this that like can aid in human creation. Like,
absolutely.
Like, 'cause I hate the idea of like full-on autonomous like creativity like from a machine. But if you can give me a computer program that I can download onto my MacBook that can allow me to like render these 3D graphics that I don't have to use like Unreal Engine.
That
like,
I don't have to hire 30 people to help me figure out how to do.
Right, and I wish those 30 people would fucking die.
Yeah, fuck them. Well, what it's going to do is it's going to destroy the business of entertainment.
Yeah.
Well, at least for movies and film. It's going to become more of an artistic pursuit.
Yeah, for the traditional way that it's done. Because, yeah, it is. It's insane that in America, everything has to be an industry. Everything has to be profitable. There is the student loan industry.
Not only in America, but in California, too.
There you go. Hey. That's what you know about. Well, you were a howlie out in Hawaii.
I was.
For a while, so you got a taste of some other culture.
Like, to a point, like to fourth grade up.
Yeah.
I have the childhood of America.
That's and right. The childhood of and the pre frontal cortex forming years of an island.
But Hawaii is so different too.
Oh yeah, it's a different universe over there.
Because it's a tourist based economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up in my formative years near Branson, Missouri, which is also a tourist based economy. But the town I was
must
in
be
was
a good
not.
One because I haven't heard of it.
You've never heard of Branson, Missouri?
Oh no,
oh,
am I fucking up?
You kind of are. It's fun. Like, I will say, Branson is fun. It's in the middle of the Ozark Mountains, which are hills.
I fucking love mountains.
Rolling green, like, beautiful, like, some of the most pretty nature you've ever seen in your life. We've got a theme park there called Silver Dollar City, which is an 1800s-themed theme park. Like, they've got a blacksmith shop and an old-timey train and all these roller coasters.
I'm fucking on board already.
Yeah, hop aboard the Frisco Line Express straight to Silver Dollar City's Main Street, baby. It's an amazing place. They've got, like, Yakov Smirnov owns a theater there. Do you know who Yakov Smirnov is?
Is that the vodka guy?
No, it's a stand-up comedian from the 70s and 80s. He was the king of Cold War comedy. He was from Russia, and he's the guy that's like, in Soviet Russia, that guy.
A classic.
Yeah, he what a country. He owns a theater down there. There's a family called the Haygoods, which is this group of family singers. I'm telling you, and it's an amazing place, but it's all tourist-based. And when you would meet someone from Branson, it's like, oh, we're playing Branson this week in football or wrestling or whatever. The Branson kids were always fucking weird because it's like, we live in a place that people come for vacation, and that is it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what Hawaii is for the most part. I live next to the military base in Hawaii. Okay. So I wasn't around. I lived on Oahu, but I didn't live in Honolulu.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Kahi.
Oh.
So I actually had more of like a military kid bringing up than a when I lived there than a tourist based one.
Was one of your parents in the military?
No.
Oh.
It's just where I lived. I just lived right next to the military.
They're just big fans.
Well, all my friends were military kids and then they're like the deployment would change and they'd move away.
Sad.
You know?
Yeah, hey, that's life. I've always wondered, we were like, I don't know, kids these days get to grow up in a place where they can add somebody forever.
Yes.
It's like...
connectivity is absurd.
It is. Like, my elementary school experience was that. It's like, hey, I met... like, my mom worked at a... she was the front desk, like, manager of a hotel when I was, like, really little. And I would, like, go to work with her sometimes.
Yeah, so you'd make friends for one day.
Yeah, there's like, oh, there's a kid my... there's a family with a kid my age. Hey, I'll be at the pool later if you want... and we'd be friends for a day. And it's like, all right. Toodaloo.
Goodbye forever.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's how it should be.
Yeah.
Because that also gives you such an easier failing ground to learn about human interaction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's so hard to fail with someone that is going to be in your life forever.
It's going to be able to see what you ate.
Or like, oh, now I can't just understand this as a mistake and avoid it. I have to patch it up. Mm-hmm. Fuck that. No one wants to patch it up.
No. Fuck them. Burn them to death. That is, and the other thing is like you're entering this weird contract with the person. So like Facebook specific and Instagram, any, we'll say anything. Like let's say I meet a person, it's a friend's significant other or a friend of a friend at a party or whatever. They follow me or add me. I go, God fucking damn it.
You were supposed to be a one day friend.
Exactly. And I don't want it getting out on out and about the town that I'm some sort of standoffish prick. So I'll add you back or I'll follow you back. Sometimes I don't follow them back because the ratio is important. sometimes like I'll do it. And then I'm like going through cleaning house being like, I'm unfollowing, unfriending people that I just don't like. My rule with Facebook is if I've never met you in my real life, we are not going to be Facebook friends. Like that is like the hard, and it's also, it's pretty much been trimmed down to just close friends and family. Cause Facebook's like the most personal one anyway. I will get to a point where I'm like looking at a name and being like, I really want to unfollow this person, but I know that they'll see it and be like, what the hell? What did I do? And I need to be able to overcome that in my own mind and be like, you don't have to be everybody's friend.
Yeah, don't put importance into the social media.
You're right, and I do. I love it, man. I live in that thing. I love my phone.
It's not fucking real, though.
Yes,
man.
It is.
No, it's not.
For me, I've actually been trying to do this thing where I, especially like comments, like I don't know what your relationship with comments about like stuff that you upload is, but it's a comedian, Chris DiStefano, talks about this a lot where he's like, I don't allow comments, negative or positive, online to affect my IRL real, like human, like being. You know, like if I make a video and I post it and somebody says, this was fucking hilarious, I go, okay. And if somebody comments, this fucking sucked, you should kill yourself, I go, okay. It's like, this is all, none of it matters. Like, that's like my starting point with the whole, like, not letting social media hurt my feelings.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I don't know. I read comments.
Yeah. I read them.
I like the ones that feel good. I also like the ones that don't feel good because I do that self-hate masturbatory thing. No, sure. I don't masturbate to self-hate.
Well...
I meant that more metaphorically. I'm one of those guys who really likes to hate myself and get in the loop of hate. And I'm trying to fix that about me, but it's still in there.
And it will be forever, I think.
So it's like when I get into these kind of beat myself up loops, which I do a lot.
Yeah,
the comments make it so much easier.
Ooh,
they just really get fucking killer blows in. Really make me feel like shit.
Yeah, you do look like Bob Ross,
dude.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
I'm reading roast comments too.
Oh right, yeah, that's a different level. That's a different level.
But I don't ever respond to them. I don't think responding to comments from someone I don't know, positive or negatively.
Yeah,
it just doesn't help me in any way.
No, it is bad.
But I had my most high profile battle is at Jam in the Van. It was with Los Digits.
I saw that one. Yeah.
Los Digits responded to every negative comment about him.
Oh boy, come on!
I was laughing so hard as I was reading it. He's like, "Fuck you, foo! I wrote that shit," and shit like that. It's so funny.
He's been in this house. He used that bathroom over there.
He snorted in there. Yeah, I mean, he went to the bathroom in there.
That's what I was worried about. Well, no, it was funny. We went to a Dodger game. It was like me, him, and Franklin Yee. And
that sounds fun.
It was a great time. It's like if you're going to go to a Dodger game, you want to go with those guys. And
I've been to a Dodger game with Los Digits, too.
It's fun. He bought like the fucking fruit that the guys stand out and sell like in the like pulling up to the parking lot. He like rolled the window down, was speaking in Spanish with the guy, got a cup of fruit. I'm like, this is the experience that you want. But they're like, "Hey, we'll pick you up at like 3. And they're like, "Hey, we all need to come in and use the bathroom." And they like all walk in holding cans of beer, just walking through my very like suburban feeling. Like these are all families in all of these little units, just fucking looking like these like spooky looking guys with their cans. I don't know. It was fun.
I was hanging out with a crew like that for a while.
Yeah.
And then I stopped.
Yeah. Okay.
I was like, I need my life to be quieter.
Looping back around to younger Evan, so you sounds like you were tormented at home your entire childhood.
I wasn't tormented. I was just yelled at constantly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I would retreat really just to my room, and I would sit there. And then my dad would get mad at me for that. He'd be like, "Hey, stop sitting alone in the dark. It's weird." And I'd be like, "I just can't win."
Nope. Tell me what to do, Papa.
That's something I've been realizing more and more recently is how I was treated different than my other siblings.
Yeah.
And I've been coming to terms with what that means, and I need to talk to my parents about it at some point.
I think so.
But not like I got yelled at a lot once because I was at a assembly in junior high, and a buddy of mine's sister was in ASB, and I yelled, "I love you, Shannon." I got yelled at for that for multiple nights at home.
You made us look so fucking stupid.
And my parents weren't even there.
Really?
Yeah, I got tattled on.
What?
For that.
That is a different level of discipline. Of like, "Hey, we heard that you shouted out at an event."
I got in trouble. At another thing in junior high, there was a school party thing. Mm-hmm. You know how they would have after, and they'd have like booths and stuff where all the kids could play at.
Yeah.
One of them was essentially a mechanical bowl. It was that same setup, but instead of a bowl, it was a surfboard, and you stood on it. And I did a backflip off of it.
Fun.
Just show off, be cool in front of the kids.
I'm from Hawaii.
Yelled at for that too.
Perfect. Perfect.
Not at school. At school, the person was like, "Hey, don't do that." But at home, fucking go to your room. You're done.
That's crazy to me.
That's what it constantly was for me.
Yeah.
So I'm coming to terms more with that.
I remember one time I was at a church event. We did a lot of church events. Are you religious?
So I was Mormon growing up, but I was never baptized into it. We converted to Christianity before it mattered to me.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. What's funny is actually when we were converting from Mormonism, my twin sister didn't know about all of the religions. So she was told, "Hey, we're not going to be Mormon anymore." And then her next sentence was, "Oh, so we're Jewish?"
That's one I've heard of from TV. You got to be one or the other. That's
those are the two, Mormonism and Jewish.
Mormonism, and it would be a better world if that was true. I was at a church event, and there was like a bonfire, and I took a big stick and put like multiple marshmallows on the stick. And I put it in the fire and let the marshmallows all catch on fire.
Yeah, I've done that a lot.
Held it up like a torch and was like, "Woo!" And like a friend's parent came over and swiped it out of my hand and went, "You're done. You are done." And I was like,
oh. Like that NBC show, The Slap.
Yes, 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 yes. And my parents also, it's like they never were like that with me, but they also never like backed me back. Okay, and we're back. Sorry, folks, there was a little bit of a snafu here with the equipment. I think it's because I'm talking too much. So for you, let's just completely move on. For junior, what when you say junior high, what grades is that?
7 and 8.
Perfect. Me too. Some people, it's like, well, yeah, junior high is like 5th grade to 7th grade, and then 8th grade is pre-high school. Like it's,
well,
it's
in Hawaii, I went to one of those that was like long when I was going to a different school than my twin sister. Okay. Like I went to a school that was specifically for dyslexic kids and gifted kids, okay. And I was like considered both. So for third grade, I had the same teacher because they taught both second and third grade in the same class.
Okay,
which is weird and bizarre. But they're the reason I can read. So thank you.
Cool.
Thank you, assets. I love that. Like, my parents definitely did things for me as well.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't bad parents.
Yeah. No.
That kind of treatment about, like, yelling at me for all that innocuous shit, it definitely came from a place of fear,
okay.
I think.
Yeah.
Because my older brother was, yeah, he, like, and I don't think he was as bad as they make it out to be.
Yeah.
But there were behaviors to legitimately be worried about from him, coming from a place of anger.
Got it.
And for me, it just, I was treated like a bad kid when I wasn't.
Yeah.
Because of that. Because
they were worried that they were going to have to go through part two.
Yeah.
Of, okay. Got it.
And then there was the other fact of it is that I was on way too much ADHD medication for all of my life.
Good. Good. Medicating kids is something that I have a lot of opinions about.
I do too. You shouldn't do it.
It's the brain is so malleable and the chemicals are swirling around. Like, let them settle a little bit before you start.
I was on 54 milligrams of Concerta.
What the
and
fuck?
I was a short kid. I was probably this tall.
Oh my God.
And I was on that I started being on ADHD medication in third grade and I didn't get off of it until senior year.
Wow.
And every time I complained about the side effects, they would up the dosage.
Just fucking pour more gasoline.
So I was on like 84 milligrams at one point.
That is crazy. That's
it's absurd.
Fucking Brendan Fraser and the Whale would be having that much. Like, that's fucking nuts.
And then being yelled at for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the combination of that is so weird.
It's a miracle that you're here.
Every day.
You're just having these realizations right now. Did you ever like play any sports or do any activities like after school, anything like that?
I did t-ball in Hawaii for a season.
Fucking cool.
I did soccer. Everybody did soccer. I did, I think, 2 years of soccer when I was a kid.
I never did.
Really? Feel like that's an American thing. One of the truly American things I've done is being in a soccer league when I'm young.
See, this is you not knowing how to be an American because
most of
America hates soccer.
Well, I think that's why they hate soccer is they did it when they were too fucking, had too little of legs to kick a soccer ball and they resent it.
I can agree with that.
I did that. I did t-ball. I played drums in junior high.
Sick.
And then I did parkour from junior high for a few years in high school.
Was there a team? Was there a parkour team?
There was a gym. It's called Tempest.
Cool.
It's actually pretty fucking.
That's some
rad.
California shit.
But I was in a I went to a gym that was all about parkour and free running, and I took lessons about parkour and free running, and I was too short to get over most of the obstacles. I didn't have the hops, so I couldn't be as good as it as my technique was, because I just didn't have the strength.
That's a whole lot of bullshit. I'm sorry.
But that was fun as shit, dog. Dude. They're like, hey, climb that wall, and I'm like, that wall is so much bigger. Than me.
What do you mean?
It's so much, and you're so much closer to the size of that wall.
That is, I remember when the parkour thing hit the mainstream.
Oh, yeah.
And me and my friends, I will admit, like, we didn't have a gym, because in Missouri, if you opened a gym like that, it would get burned to the ground. We would just watch YouTube videos of, like, tutorials on how to do it, and the only thing I ever learned how to do was I could do what was called, I believe, a Kong vault.
I can do those.
I could do a Kong vault over a bench, like a picnic table. I went to a park and like did a little vault over the picnic table over and over again while my grandma stood there with the dog being like, what is happening?
The Kong is the second most fun vault to do, I think.
Let's get the top five. what's the most fun vault?
The most fun one to do is a dash.
Okay.
Which is where you are essentially in, like, your legs are ahead of you, and it's like a Kong, but your legs are ahead of you.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a thing called a combination vault where you do a Kong into a dash, which is fun as shit.
That's like some Mario shit.
Yeah, I would do that all the time. The vaults are fun as fuck, dog.
I would do that all the time.
All the time, dog.
That's awesome.
I did a lot of that. Well, even before that, when I was in Hawaii still, I did gymnastics.
Oh,
so it was kind of like an evolution of that, yeah. I guess. I did tap dancing as a kid.
Perfect.
Because well, my mom was mad that I wasn't in a sport like my siblings were. Mm-hmm. I assume because it meant she could get no alone time. So there was one day we were at my sister's dance studio. My sister was in a tap class, and mm-hmm. she was like, "Hey, what sport do you want to do?" And as a joke, I was like, "How about tap?" And I said it like that.
Yeah.
And then she rolled me in the class, and I had to do it for a year.
I can tap. I can do a little Cincinnati. I don't know. I was in one musical where there was a tap number.
Yeah.
Were
you any good?
No.
I got pretty good at it.
You know what's crazy is I went to see this show called Anything Goes on Broadway, which is a big tap-heavy musical. Sutton Foster was the star. Like, it was amazing. This is when I was in high school, and it was on this trip where... So this happened, and then another thing happened. We saw that. We saw How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, with starring Daniel Radcliffe, and then we saw Wicked. And during Anything Goes, during the tap number... Me and my friends were all like, "What the fuck? There's a track, like it's like a recording of the tap. But it wasn't. They were just that good. Like That's we had wild. Never heard tap dancing that sounded like it was so good it sounded fake.
Sounded like the music.
Yes,
like it's supposed to.
Yes, exactly. So we were like, "What the fuck?" And then that same thing happened to us when we saw Wicked, because that was Wicked was the first show we saw. And like
I've seen Wicked twice, once in Broadway and once in London.
Me too. Not in London, in Springfield, Missouri, and then once on Broadway. But when the first fucking the opening number starts and everyone's like, "She's dead," like all that stuff, we all.
Oh,
were
I should note,
there.
I fell asleep during Wicked both times.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Well,
so don't ask me
kill
about
yourself.
Specific
How about
parts
that?
Of
How about
it.
Show's over. I love it. I cried. I cried during Defying Gravity.
Dude, I've sucked a dick. You're way gayer than me.
Oh, yeah, you are bi. We'll get into that. What was I saying? Oh,
fucking, this guy's a fag.
The song, he said it, not me. The song starts.
Just point to Sonic?
I pointed at the song, the homophobic Sonic doll. You can take that if you want.
I'm not that gay. I'm not in the business of having more plush animals.
For sure. I also keep looking at our Nicolas Cage pillow.
I gave my ex-girlfriend an exact pillow like that.
Wow.
We didn't last that long.
No. that's right. But the music started, and we thought that it was fake, like with the singing. We were like... That's the track. Like, why the fuck they're just playing? This is from the studio track. And it's like, our teacher had to be like, "No, they just are the best singers in the entire world." And we went, "Oh.
All right.
They should probably be paid like $1,800 a week for that." Moving right along.
Oh, it's crazy because everyone is capable of singing.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people are really good at it.
Other people have a different gear that I have been around some of those people in my life that have that different gear.
I have too.
And it's like... It's so noticeably different. It's like, oh,
it's also,
you.
It's a lot of them. There's a lot of people who can sing.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's my old high school choir teacher. He used to say, "Anyone can sing."
So backhanded.
He was really great. He would do a thing where he.
Dude, choir teachers and dance teachers are the most abusive people ever.
They're very catty.
And choreographers.
They're very petty and catty.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love the guy.
Especially when they're stuck in a fucking school area.
A school district.
They're mad.
Yeah, it's like, this is not what I imagined. I imagined being Professor Feathers.
I have a lot of exposure to the choir nature in the high school I went to because I was a stage tech for the choir. So I wasn't in the choir, but I was around it, and I saw how gross it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just, you know, building shit.
Choir is something that I only did because I did theater, so it was like this thing where I would always equate it to I lift weights because I'm a football player and I want to be better at football, so I lift weights. I'm in choir because I'm a theater kid and I want to be better at being a theater kid, so I do choir so that I can just sing for like an hour and a half every day.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it was fun. You know, we had me and my fellers, we had our fun in our little tenor section. But the teacher, he would do this thing when we were talking where he would just like if chatter broke out amongst the choir, he would just put his hands down at his sides and just go. Just with his eyes closed, just kind of like.
Would he ever say, "I'm waiting"?
Well, what he would do, we would all notice he was doing it, and he would go, "Oh, are you all ready to listen now? I can keep waiting." Just like, this is some next level fucking parenting here.
My mom was a school teacher. She was a sixth grade teacher before I was born. I think she had stopped well before I was born.
Oh, really?
But she used to, what she would do is if her students weren't listening, she'd just start whispering as she did the same lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So that all the kids that were slightly listening, like, would fucking get quieter to listen.
That's some, your parents are psychological warfare, like, black belts. That is, that's.
Yeah!
That's some. He says with so much pain in his eyes. You know what? Yeah.
I know it. Well, my mom more so. My it was more came down to I would get in a yelling fight with my mom, and then my dad would get back from work, and then you just have to back her up.
Yeah.
But then because of that, my entire relationship with my dad was just him yelling at me in defense of my mom.
That's perfect.
And I didn't learn he was like a human until I was 18.
He turned 18.
And then it all changed immediately.
He showed up with a piece of pie and a crazy smile.
He's like, "Hey, I'm a guy." And I was like, "What?"
Since when? That's amazing. How old are you?
I'm 23.
Okay. That's what I was trying to piece it together.
So I'm still in the self-discovery phase.
That's right. Your brain's not fully formed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
I'm 28. I'm scared to keep going. I think I'll die soon. High school.
I was in stage tech all 4 years.
That's what you've been saying this. So that did you not do any like perform? Were you never on the stage like performing? Always behind the scenes?
I did a semester of theater, and I just didn't like it. I don't like plays.
Yeah,
and I don't fucks with them.
You fall asleep during Wicked.
I've also seen Lion King twice. Once in London and once on. We went to London as a school trip with the show choir and. Mm. They just offered the tech people to be able to go, and I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And they normally, because normally when they would do a show choir trip, the stage tech would come along because they do a competition on the trip, so we'd have to set up their band and shit like we always do.
Yeah.
But they weren't even doing a competition in London, so we just got to be in London. It was fucking rad.
Wow.
It was really cool.
It's fun to be a part of something.
But in high school, I was in stage tech the whole time, and like, so on the weekends, we would go and we'd work shows, and we'd go and we'd work competitions and all that, so it, like, I had this kind of blue collar like focus on my social life.
Yeah.
Where it was like work centric.
Yeah, we're here to wrap cables today.
Yeah, 100%. And so it's like I have a very much like a kind of like job site kind of personality to me.
Water cooler talk. I get that from you. It's always like anytime we bump into each other, it's always like, "How you doing?" Like there is like a bit of a, "Hey, we're both at work," quality to it. I like it. It reminds me of good stuff.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people out here that kind of have that nature because they're pansies.
Yes, and also a lot of people don't know how to be normal people. Like, they don't know how to just, like, fucking relax and be like, "Hey, how are you?" Like, it's always either, like, they're silent and keep their head down, or they are so
It's those consumed. Goddamn precipitation... participation trophies.
That's right, and I've been wanting to say this for a while now. Those participation trophies, you can take those and shove them right up Michelle. No, I don't want to get into that.
You mean Big Mike?
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Oh my god! Do you listen to Tim Dillon?
Occasionally, I love him.
He's one of the funniest. I've been listening to. He's been talking about that stuff on the podcast lately, and it's been very good.
The Big
work.
Mike conspiracy.
Yeah, that's
Isn't
which
it just because of her arms. She's just fit. Hey,
I couldn't tell you what it's because of, because it that's one of those. There are certain conspiracy theories where I just want to look out a window, like onto like a lake, and be like, "What happened to us?"
Well, I tell you what. she has to be a man because I'm sexually attracted to her.
Right? There you go. Right? Hey, big. We've completely missed. There we go. Another fist bump.
My man.
We fist bump for that and the black bears in West Hollywood. There's a theme in Evan's life, everybody.
Black men, strong black men.
You did say they're the only ones that are like, you were the nicest person to me.
Yeah, it's like, I want something from you.
Oh, my God.
I want that sweet cock.
You didn't go to college, did you?
I didn't.
No.
I didn't go to college.
Why? Was there fuck it, I'll do something else.
Well, I knew I wanted to do blue-collar type jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Or acting and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And all of it, every job I considered wanting, college didn't make sense for. So I knew pretty early on I didn't want to go to college. I have two high school diplomas because I got a GED while I was in school still to make it easier to get acting jobs.
Oh.
And then I just finished high school anyway.
Is that common out here in California for kids to kind of emancipate themselves in that way?
I wasn't emancipated. I wanted to be emancipated, but that's because I hated how I was treated by my parents.
Right, yeah.
That was more of like a... And I would threaten them with it a lot.
Yeah. And it's L.A. County. Is Santa Clarita is not in L.A. County, is it?
The part of Santa Clarita Valley I lived in Stevenson Ranch. It's the only part that is technically
LA County. Oh, I know
LA
that
County.
One. Yeah, that's, yeah. And I feel like all of the laws in this county regarding, children getting away from their parents, renaming yourself, changing your identity, changing your life are all probably the easiest in the entire world to get through. Somebody told me once, I was like...
Because it's entertainment-based.
Exactly. It's like people want to change their name all the time. And it's like, I wonder how hard it would be to change your name. And they're like, you literally just have to fill out one form.
Well, you have to announce it in a newspaper for 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. That's
What?
That's a law that's been there for a long time.
What do you mean? Is there a column in the newspaper that's just lists of people's names?
I think so. Well, it'd be an announcement of this person is becoming this person. So that way, debt collector, it's like an old timey law where it's so you can't get away from debt collectors easily.
Interesting.
It's it's an announcement to the public. And I think that's how it's worded. It's not necessarily newspaper, but it's an announcement.
Huh.
But I know that because I wanted to change my middle name to Goddamn. So when I graduated from high school, because they say your middle name, if it was legally my middle name, they'd have to.
Yeah.
They'd have to be like, Evan, Goddamn Warner. And I was that sounds fucking awesome. I didn't do it. It was too much work.
I'm glad you didn't. I wouldn't have had you on the show.
Dude, I'd stand by it.
Yeah?
I'd do it tomorrow.
I tell people all the time I want to have my child's middle name be Danger. I think that is a badass, legitimately a badass middle name. It's like, what's your middle name? Ellen, what's yours? Danger.
Mine's Patrick.
Oh.
Goddamn is way better, isn't it?
Mine's James. I like it. Just a little fact about me. I like my name. Oh, my God. So what drove you to comedy? Or actually, real quick, before we get into that, because that's a longer question. Did you have, I like to ask people this, did you have in high school or junior high, during those years, a Mr. Feeney style teacher, a teacher that kind of went out of their way to mentor you or be nice
to
you?
Dead Poets Society? Is that a reference to?
Yeah.
I had them that were nice to me.
Yeah.
But
you didn't have one that you could go eat lunch in their classroom?
I did, but I always thought that was weird.
Oh, really?
That teachers would want that relationship with their students.
Interesting.
I was like, that's not what you're fucking paid for. We're not hanging out.
I had the opposite experience. I did not eat lunch in the cafeteria for the last 3 years of high school. Sophomore through senior year, me and a group of 15, not 15, 10 of my friends
English teacher.
The theater classroom.
The theater class?
Yeah.
English teachers do that a lot, too.
They do.
It's strange.
Mm.
Strange to me.
It's strange when it's strange when an English teacher does it. I think it's a little less strange when a theater teacher does it.
That makes sense.
We were almost always, talking about, shit for the show that we were trying
to put on. Rehearsing it. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
I've had English teachers do that. I did have the stagecraft teacher, Miss Rosebrock, was very much a kind of, teaching you how to be a person more, almost more of a parenting figure than I probably really needed.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the only one that was that for me. So to her, I'm very thankful. There you go. And strong black woman.
Shout out.
Strong black woman taught me how to be a person.
That's beautiful. That's we had our like theater like tech teacher, Mr. Townsend. He had been there for like 30 years at the school, and he was awesome. Like, and he had, I've talked about him a lot on this show. He like had more power than the superintendent, basically, with like how much fucking tenure he had and like the respect that he had of the district. We would do a thing where we would just leave like campus in his truck. He would just toss you his keys and be like, go buy me a bag of nails. And we'd just go buy a bag of nails and like get Burger King on the way back.
That's fucking hilarious.
It was amazing. He's the coolest man
ever.
I love
tech teachers.
They're great.
Because at the end of the day, they're foremen.
Yeah, they're foremen with an artistic little twist. It's fun. It's like they're the weird like guy you see at like a play. And it's like, why is that guy here? He's got his wraparound Oakleys on and
yeah,
like his dad's
and his
shorts.
Utility quilt.
Yeah.
Kilt.
Quilt. You can't work in this town again.
I'm warm.
Oh my god. What made you ultimately decide like to get into stand-up comedy? Is it just frustration with trying to do acting stuff?
Well, I always wanted to try it.
Yeah.
Like, it always appealed to me. Yeah. I never thought I could, and like it was never a reality. Like, when my dad used to drive me, we would have Laugh USA on or Blue Collar Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that we'd listen to stand-up. So I always loved stand-up.
Yeah.
And there was a time where I wanted to try it, and I'd wanted to try it for a long time. And then I did it, and I went to the Ha-Ha, and I fucking loved it. And I was like, well, this is what I'm going to do.
Wow.
Forever.
Was that your first ever open mic? Was that the Ha-Ha?
It was.
Wow.
It was hosted by Nate Welsh.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
That's very weird.
Well, I think he was filling in for Pauline.
Mm-hmm.
Paulina at the time. You remember her?
I don't know. I wasn't around for that.
She hasn't been back around, I don't think.
Yeah. There's a whole... Because, like, I moved to L.A. July of 2020, so...
Oh, so the pandemic was already happening.
It was mid-pandemic. Everything was completely closed, and
Why'd you move here then?
Because I was living in Chicago, and it was even more closed. Like, not necessarily more closed, like, same level of closed, because we live in these liberal hellholes. It was like, I just had this real, I had wanted to move to LA in 2020, like in January. I had like made plans. It's like, this summer I'm moving out there. Go and like spread my wings. And pandemic happens. I'm like, well, I guess no one's moving anywhere. And a bunch of stuff happened, but I ultimately realized it's like, I feel like, because everything I did in Chicago was all live. It was like all stand-up, sketch shows, improv shows. I taught improv classes.
That's the good stuff. Live stuff's the good stuff.
Exactly. And I was like, that stuff is the stuff that's going to come back last. I bet they're going to find a way to start like filming and like shooting things.
It's good instinct.
Way before. Yeah.
I don't think you knew about the barrier of entry to filmed things.
Well, no, not necessarily. But it was like, I don't know. LA is just more. And it's like, if you're going to be depressed and like stuck and being away from people, do it in a beautiful
climate. Do it on the
climate. Beach. Yeah, do it on the beach. Do it in the mountains. Like, Chicago had become, and I use this term so much, Chicago during the lockdown, it felt like I was walking around a morgue filled with the dead bodies of my life. Like,
whoa.
Because it's like a city that you like walk everywhere or take the train or the bus.
Yeah,
like,
I hate cities.
You're an organism, a part of a larger organism. And it's like every corner has a memory on it. And for that year, the memories were just, there's my favorite bar that I had my birthday party at with windows all boarded up. And, oh, and there's the hospital that I got my, when I scraped my knee, I went in there for some antibiotics, and there's a pile of dead bodies like in that truck. Like, it was fucking terrible.
God damn. I started stand-up in January of 2020.
Perfect timing.
And then I got really into it.
Yep.
And then everything shut down, and mm-hmm. I didn't know enough people to have the connections to know where mics were happening.
Yeah, the secret shows and stuff.
So I just had to sit in the want.
Oh, so you didn't do any of the like the parking lot or the rooftop or any of that stuff?
Not until the Ha-Ha reopened.
Yeah.
Because I had started stand-up with the girl I was dating at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I just wasn't networking the way I should have been.
Yeah.
And also, it's like when you're 3 months in, you only know a couple spots to go anyway.
True.
You're not looking
much. No.
So, yeah, I just, like, so I had that bug of wanting to do it all the time.
And you literally
and
couldn't.
Nowhere to do it.
Yeah.
And no way to figure out where to do it. Because I was using the Comedy Bureau before everything shut down, mm-hmm. and the guy that runs the Comedy Bureau got, like, really weird about the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, really weird about mm-hmm. the pandemic. And he's kind of been, it's like, because of it, nobody uses the Comedy Bureau really still.
No, yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I just fucking...
That's fascinating.
Just sat there being like, I want to do it. I want to do stand-up. I want to...
But the world, the whole world is closed.
And I just couldn't.
That's a very interesting time to get into a thing and to come back to it. And I feel like a lot of people would have just never come back to it and just be like, well, I guess this is a sign from God that I'm not meant for this.
Yeah. Damn. Well, dude, I mean, remember when we were doing the HaHa April onward, like for the whole next year, people would come and be like, this is my first time doing stand-up since the pandemic. And we'd mm-hmm. be like, just now?
Really? Yeah, what took you so long? Yeah, that was a man. Being out on that dirty little patio was so fun. And, like, when I was, like, working the door and stuff and just, like, bipping and bopping and hanging out with people, those were some very fun memories. That's, like, summer 2021. That was a very fun time that got me excited about doing stand-up again, which I was very into. Who are your favorite? Who are your guys? Who are your favorite comics?
Hedberg. Yeah. James Acaster.
Oh, really?
British guy. Yeah. I love him. Yeah. He's so funny to me.
Interesting.
Of course, like Chappelle, Burr, all those.
Yeah.
Hicks.
Yeah.
Classics.
Classics.
Classics. And James Acaster.
Mitch Hedberg is one of those. It's like, he's a classic that...
Hedberg's my top dog.
He's still a little bit like, whenever somebody says that, you go, oh... Okay, you know what you're talking about, like, a little bit. My favorite Hedberg joke is when...
I also really like Gary Goldman.
Gary Goldman's great.
Gary Goldman's awesome.
He, did you see, have you ever watched Dane Cook's Torgasm?
No, I have. I've only seen one special with Dane Cook, and it was very good.
Gotcha.
The one that closed with the breaking and entering story.
The B&E. We're going to do a little B&E.
I almost said the B&E, but I was like, I should give a little more context if I'm introducing the idea.
That's true. The breaking and entering, yeah. So Torgasm is this, like, docuseries on HBO that is on HBO Max or just Max or whatever. I don't fucking know anymore.
It's Max.
Just
now
Max.
You know.
It's just clean. and it's like a little documentary about this tour that Dane Cook did, and Bobby Kelly and Gary Goldman were, like, on the tour with him, like, featuring. And so it's just, like, them riding around the country in a bus, and I fucking love
Sounds
it.
Sounds rad.
I watch it all the time. Yeah.
I'm gonna watch it later.
You should. Are you a dork for, like, watching stand-up based media?
Yeah.
Me too. I loved I'm Dying Up Here. Did you ever see that show?
I started, but it's on Showtime.
Yeah.
So I like the guy who I was stealing the account of figured it out before I finished.
It's great.
I like that. I loved Crashing.
Pete Holmes and I are very alike. Like with the way we, like, look at the world.
Have you met him?
I've met him a couple times. I actually met him when I was visiting out here. I was visiting my senior year of college to do my, like, senior acting showcase out here. Our program does that where it's like, if you're a senior in the acting program, you fly out here and do, like, a live scene in front of, like, agents and managers and shit. And
a showcase.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I did the showcase, got a meeting with an agent that at the time, it no longer exists, the talent agency. It was called Trio Talent. Their office was directly across the street from Meltdown Comics. And I went, did the meeting, and was like, oh, shit, that's where the Nerdist, like, podcast, and, like, that's where You Made It Weird and stuff. I'm going to go look around. And I, like, walked in and was just, like, a fanboy of the thing. Because Pete Holmes, that podcast was the first podcast I started listening to. And I'm just walking around, and I talk to an employee. He's like, can I help you? And I go, oh, I'm just looking around. This is where they do all the podcasts, right? And the guy's like, yeah, Pete's up there right now recording if you want to stick around and say hi. And I was like, oh, yeah.
That's super cool.
It was awesome. And he came down. It was John Early was the guest, and he took a picture of us. John Early held my phone and took a photo of me and Pete Holmes.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that made Pete Holmes' day.
Oh, yeah. He hugged me because it was right after he had gotten engaged to his now wife, Valerie, and I'd seen it on Instagram like 2 days before, and I was like, and congrats to you and sweet lady Val, like, that's so amazing. And he was like, I have to hug you. he's a good guy. He's one of
that's
the good
fucking
ones.
Rad.
Yeah. And then I met him after a show at the Improv one time.
And you tell him about that experience?
I did not.
You should.
I probably will one day. I also went to the Chicago, they did a Chicago screening of season two of Crashing that I got invited to because I worked for Second City and they always sent out like free shit to those type of things to us. And I went and I asked him a question during the Q&A and I also didn't bring up that I had met him before. I should really start doing more.
Well, you shouldn't when you're asking a question on a Q&A.
Right. Hello, Pete.
Hey, I've met you.
Chance Nichols, Springfield, Missouri. Let me just say, do you do that? I think that's a fun bit.
My whole question is, do you remember me?
Meltdown Comics with John Early? He probably would have. That's a humble brag on me. That's a bit I do whenever I'm at like a Q&A or asking like questions at a thing. I stand up. Even if no one else has stood up, and I say, hello, Chance Nichols, Springfield, Missouri, and then I say my question.
I like that.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's a cute little joke.
Take that with you. where do you see all this going for you? If you had your like dream career, what is it? Like,
tours
what's it
and
look
specials.
Like? There you go. Tours, specials. Do you ever want to do a podcast, a YouTube channel, anything
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, I'm starting one with Alyssa Poteet.
Oh.
And the problem is I don't have the patience to edit.
There you have it.
That's what it's come down to so
yeah.
far.
Yeah. Hmm.
Sitting down and editing is very hard.
It is. I'm learning that myself, and a lot of I've like started doing like thumbnail editing for YouTube, like learning that whole thing.
I haven't even done that.
It's the most important thing, and let me tell you something. As a YouTube mastermind, the most important two things that you could possibly have for your video is a strong title and a good thumbnail. Everything else is secondary to those two things.
God damn.
So.
I don't like that.
Yeah, well, get used to it, honey. It is funny how every child only watches YouTube now.
Like, I still watch YouTube instead of the other shit most of the time.
Yeah, young people under the age of, like, I'll say probably 25 now, or 24, like, right around, like, your age and below, YouTube is first, like, with a lot of stuff. Like, Schultz told this story, actually, on this. I was listening to this podcast. Andrew Schultz told a story of the moment he realized it's like, this is the next thing that we all need to be focusing on, was he was like at his uncle's place or something, and his little cousin, he wanted to put something on the TV, and his cousin had the remote, and he's like, hey, can you turn the channel to, or can you turn the TV to ABC? And it's like this little kid, and the kid's like, what channel is that? And he's like, it's ABC. And he goes, yeah, what channel is that? I don't know what that is. And it's like, he was like, fuck. These kids don't know what ABC is.
These kids don't watch sitcoms.
That's why How I Met Your Father just got canceled. Which it did.
It makes sense.
That's my favorite show.
No, it wasn't.
I've never seen How I Met Your Mother, let alone that.
How I Met Your Mother is great. In fact, do yourself a favor. Watch the pilot episode of How I Met Your Father. And then watch the pilot episode of How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
And you'll be a How I Met Your Mother fan for life. Because it is so much better. Just a pilot alone is so much better.
I want to do that.
That said, Chris Mack is in the special of How I Met Your Father.
Really?
Yeah, he's doing background.
He's in the background. I love that. There are guys in my life that I went to college with that, like, there'll be a background actor for, like, some movie with, like, whoever. And it'll, like, they'll like, tweet the picture of the poster for the movie and be like, check out my new film this weekend.
Dude, I've seen guys use it as credits for stand up. I'm like, oh, you're in that movie? They're like, yeah, I'm just doing background. And I was like, that's not a fucking credit.
You can't say that. I used to do it as a joke because I was a featured extra in the show Empire on Fox because it shoots in Chicago. I was a waiter. I just dropped a steak on Felicia Rashad's table and kept walking. I didn't say a line or anything. And they even cut the part where I dropped the steak. They just shows me walking away from the table. And I used to jokingly have hosts bring me up. It's like, you know him from Empire on Fox. And I would get up and I'd go, anybody here watch Empire? It's like season 4, episode 7, minute 13. You see me walk past a table. But some people, that's their only thing that they can cling to for any sort of joy in their life.
Wouldn't it be great to be one of those people? So happy from so little.
I would love to be dumb.
I love it so much.
I would love to be
I
stupid.
Think I am dumb.
We started this podcast with you explaining like the properties of God to me. You explained to me what Jesus is and how he relates to the universe with science and math.
I'm not. I just remember shit, and I'm good at critical thinking. That doesn't make me smart.
You should have worked on the Manhattan Project. What are you doing these roast battles, making fun of Mexicans? You're missing out on a lot of potential here.
You don't understand. There's so many Mexicans in L.A. It's such a wealth.
Yeah. All right. Well, we always end the show the same way. I ask the guest, do you feel good about it? Do you feel good? Is there anything else you want to get off your chest? Anything about your life?
I actually did well in school.
Okay.
I was a straight A student.
Yeah.
Not straight A, but damn near.
Yeah.
Except Spanish.
Bisexual A. Hey, come on now. Hey, here we are. Hey, okay.
Hey, that's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to brag real quick and be like, I did well in school.
Cool.
And I didn't have to study either.
Wow.
You fucks who had to study.
You're just one of those smart kids, huh?
Oh, yeah. I had actually, because twin sister, she had to study all the time.
Yeah.
When we graduated, if you were in the top 100 in our class, you got seated instead of alphabetical order by, like, what seat you were in that class, like your ranking.
Yeah.
And there was one person separating my sister and I, and she would study every night, and I never studied.
That's hilarious. You sucked up all the brain juice
made her
in
so
utero.
Mad.
Are you fraternal or identical?
Well, I have a twin sister, so you tell me.
You can be an identical with a sister, can't you?
Straight up not how that works.
I thought for sure.
Well, here's another science explanation with Evan.
I'm a dummy. I had friends that were twins growing up. There was a brother and sister, and they basically looked like the boy and the girl version of each other.
Yeah, like siblings.
Yeah. I'm glad we're bookending this with me sounding like a fucking dope.
Well, I'll tell you, so to be an identical twin, it's one sperm fertilizes one egg, and then the egg divides after it's fertilized, and that's
okay.
So it's same DNA sequence.
Gotcha.
Fraternal twins, it's two eggs are released and two sperm fertilize them, so they're essentially siblings that are born on the same day.
Yeah, two different people as opposed to copies of the same.
Yeah,
thing.
Well, identical twins can't have DNA evidence used against them in court.
Really?
Because there's someone with the same DNA as them.
That's kind of cool.
Isn't that wild?
That's kind of like one of those, like a spouse cannot be compelled to testify against their
spouse.
Like weird little loophole things. Well, that's cool. Well, like I said, we end the episode the same way every time with a question that I ask the guests that I don't prepare you on. And the question is, if you could go back in time to a past version of Evan when you were at your most lost, your most confused, you're kind of directionless. I always say it's like you're hiking up the mountain and you have a map in your hand and the wind just blew it out of your hands.
So
if you could rip a hole, question's not done. If you could rip a hole in space and time and poke your head through it and yell a single piece of advice to that past version of yourself, what would you say to him?
Don't move into a house with cocaine addicts. You know our cocaine addicts.
Beautiful. That may be the best piece of advice we've ever gotten on the show. Evan, where can people find you online?
I primarily use Instagram at @tisevanwarner, and you can find me otherwise through that.
There you go. Do you have any shows coming up that you want the people to know about?
I have a Fourth Wall Cafe coming up.
I also
have a Jam in the Van roast battle on the 28th of September versus Nasty Nate, the guy who hosted my first ever open mic. So go watch that. I'm excited for that.
Full circle.
And then I'm doing Rec Room soon. The 8th.
Okay.
I'm doing Rec Room the 8th in Huntington Beach, if you're around.
We got a big Huntington Beach following on here.
Do you really?
A lot of Orange County people, like, sort of aligned with my beliefs politically. all right, everybody, as always, please be sure to follow the show at We Didn't Peek on Instagram and all forms of social media, and follow me at Chances Loud. But you already knew that. So that's the show. Evan, thanks for doing it. Goodbye.